Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, everybody, from all of us here at Unknown Country, Dreamland, and The Experience. This year, our two-week-long special is going to be An Hour with Linda Moulton Howe. We haven't done a full hour with Linda Moulton Howe in a very long time. And believe me, as always, we got into some incredible stuff over the course of this hour. So enjoy it, and we'll see you again in 2019. Can you believe that date? All right, folks, we're back to a long Dreamland tradition. One reporter who loves mysteries is radio's leading science journalist, Linda Moulton, documentary filmmaker and the reporter and editor for EarthFiles.com, the Internet's most respected edge science website. Today, we are going to be riffing together on high strangeness, starting with MK Ultra and its possible continuing operation and influence in the modern world. Here she is from Albuquerque, Linda Moulton Howe.
Hey, Whitley, happy holidays. It's nice to be back with this discussion that you and I have had, it seems like, for years, and that we are now, as we come to the end of 2018, going into 2019, from every direction. I am getting, I will say, from some of the whistleblowers, a sense that 2019 could be one of the most tumultuous years, physically, from the planet's point of view, from the environment, from the government, and possibly finally getting that headline that we've all been waiting for so long, that we're not alone in this universe, and that it is preposterous to keep living on a planet that is concocted with policies of lies and denial that are covering up everything from an alien presence to the fact that the CIA, all the way back to 1953, that period, that they were designing a way to control and manipulate human minds, and that it finally got officially sanctioned by the CIA in 1953, and that's 65 years ago, and it's called MKUltra. We've heard about this word, and I think everybody sort of thought that it went back to the dim past and that it would have no relevance to our lives. And today, if we can help the Dreamland audience understand that MKUltra probably has been still functioning even beyond the Frank Church investigations in the 70s, in which they found that it was a program that was designed by a guy named Gottlieb, Sidney Gottlieb. Where was his history? It was with the Nazis in Germany. It's so amazing, Whitley. We brought over German physicists to design and get our rockets launching from White Sands Missile Range. And we brought somebody named Sidney Gottlieb, who started working for the brand new CIA, conceived in September 18, 1947, and made official by the Truman administration. But by the 53, 7, 7 and 6, 6 years after the creation of the CIA in 1953, they were fully sanctioning what is MKUltra. And that MKUltra, when you read, I've been going through all of these documents that John Greenwald has been in a war with the CIA now since 1996. He began as a teenager wanting to get the MKUltra documents. They put him off for a long time. Then in 2004, I believe it was, John got four CD-ROMs, and CIA said that's all of the MKUltra documents that they had. And a guy who was a follower of John Greenwald went through, it's hard to believe, but he went through line by line in the what would be the index and contents of the four CD-ROMs in 2004 and found that they didn't match, and that what was missing were a lot of documents, and John Greenwald began another FOIA. Well, in October, he got a few more MKUltra documents, and then the CIA said that they were through, that there was no more to get, and John still knows that these missing documents that the guy went line by line are still there, so he now calls it his battle with the CIA. And part of what maybe they are trying to hide is if you go to, for example, one of the documents, these are exact words from a document that was recently released to John, quote, "The production of amnesia, which could be regularly and successfully produced in humans through indirect, secret, or concealed induction methods that can include stimulations from mechanical, visual, auditory, drugs, chemicals, gases, aerosols, or hypnosis," close quote. So regular and successful amnesia by secret methods of chemicals and hypnosis, that's what various people who have worked either in the military or in secret programs, they say they've always been subjected to memory wipes during or after very secret missions. I've run into this several times. And when you think backwardly, John Burroughs to this day, it's almost 40 years back to December 1980 of RAF Bentwaters and Woodbridge. And here, John is the only person, an Air Force first-class airman, who was in Rendlesham Forest on December 26th and 28th, 1980. He is the only one of that entire base that was NATO's largest at that time. They had tactical nuclear weapons on both sides of the base. Everybody admits that now. And that John Burroughs is the only person that the military at that joint UK-US base saw twice engulfed in light. Jim Peniston knows that there was a blast of light, and then he never knew what happened to John Burroughs, and John has never, ever been able to penetrate amnesia that haunts him in his mind from that moment on December 26th. He remembers the blast of white light. He has never remembered anything else. And then you go to December 28th, and Adrian Bastinza, a buck sergeant who Colonel Charles Halt, who was the deputy base commander, ordered that Bastinza would walk with John Burroughs on that third night toward the lights. And that Halt said, it's on the record, maybe John can bring the light closer. And what happens? Bastinza says that he feels the light that they're walking toward suddenly pushes Bastinza to the ground. That's what he has said on the record. The lights push me to the ground. And then what does he see? He sees John Burroughs literally rising. Those are Bastinza's words, rising in red, yellow, orange, white light. And we know that Charles Halt and at least 13 to 15 other men were back a ways. They saw this too. John Burroughs cannot remember anything. Was he subjected to some sort of hypnosis or chemical amnesia? That is one of the issues that Adrian Bastinza himself has brought up with John and me in just the last 3 years. Adrian told us in a one-on-one where we went to see him in Texas. We've never had him on video or audio say this. He remembers that he was subjected to a chemical hypnosis. So do others, but they've never gone on the record. How much of MKUltra, how much of specific amnesia as the goal happened at RAF Bentwaters, has happened even with, let's say, the secret astronaut allegation in the secret space program. How many people who have worked for the U.S. military and the U.S. government have repeatedly been subjected to MKUltra memory wipes? And what is, then, the state of their mind, their brain today in 2018?
Linda, we're going to take a short break right now. And when we come back, we've got a lot to talk about, it looks like. We'll be right back.
Mm-hmm. Whitley Strieber has published an incredible 2-volume historical novel called In Hitler's House under his open pseudonym Jonathan Lane. This amazing story follows the life of William Weber, who meets Hitler while touring Germany in 1931 and becomes his friend and confidant, but then, when he realizes the truth, becomes a spy in Hitler's house for the Allies. Living a life of terrible danger, he falls in love with another of Hitler's secret friends, also a spy in his house. This is a story of espionage and desperate love, and the deepest portrait of Adolf Hitler ever created. Don't miss In Hitler's House, available in paperback and as an ebook on Amazon.
Linda, of course, this is all intensely interesting to me personally for the following reasons. The first one is I have an implant in my ear, which was put in by people, which my listeners all know all about. I'm not going to go into, and you do too. The second is missing time experiences. I've had one, which was induced in France by request. The two people who were involved were apparently, I guess, some, I don't know who they were. They were apparently French intelligence agents. They didn't identify themselves, but they came to my apartment that we were staying in for a week in Paris, and there was no way they could have found me if they were fans, because it wasn't even a hotel. So, and they induced it. They said it was induced by a tone, and they told me they couldn't leave me a tape of what I would say when they interviewed me in this other state that it put me in. But they did do the interview and let me listen to it. And all I can remember about it is it made me very happy. Or at least that's what I remember. Maybe that's not true, but it's what I remember. More recently, in May of 1986, I was with a group of people in Seattle, one or two of whom are among the last living possessors of an important secret that we've all agreed to keep. And we talked about it. Lo and behold, when I was walking through LAX on my way back home from flying to Seattle, flying back, I experienced 45 minutes of missing time. Now I have remembered the conversation, which was about, I remember the whole sequence pretty well, and the conversation was basically about what we had talked about and whether or not anybody nearby might have heard our conversation, which they did not. So I thought that it was, I think this is happening, and it's happening right now, and I'm one of the victims, frankly, so I'm absolutely fascinated with what you're saying.
Right.
But let's think about this at Bentwaters. These and not just at Bentwaters, but wouldn't it be safe to say that there could be a large scale program to keep people from knowing the truth about something?
Right. Absolutely.
What is it, Linda? Do you have any inkling?
I know that one of the big issues has been the fact that our government knew from the 40s on that there was an alien presence on this planet. They discovered by the early 50s and knew that there was an alien presence on the moon. Eventually, with the probes that we have had going to Mars, I have been told this directly, we know that there is ancient archaeology on Mars. Now jump to the last 2.5 years. I've never had so many substantive, serious military whistleblowers seek me out as has been happening in the last 2.5 years. And at least three of them have been on special operations in Alaska. Well, one in Alaska, but Antarctica is the main one. And that in Antarctica, to have three individuals tell me that they have either been there directly themselves in special ops or in missions that they have worked on in other countries that they have been shown photographs. Either way, the witnesses say that what is 2 miles under ice in Antarctica is archaeology or let's just say it is artifacts that are huge structures that are covered with hieroglyphs, and that the hieroglyphs have been studied by scientists that have been taken there, and they are unrecognizable. So we think of hieroglyphs, that word hieroglyph, as Egypt. They say absolutely not Egyptian, not Mayan, not Sanskrit. I have gone through a list where I've shown some of these whistleblowers, look at this, have you seen this? And they go through all the no's and say, and this is what they concluded, that we are looking at something that is carved with such precision and deep in these huge structures, but it is not recognizable to scientists who have studied what we'll call the last 12,000 years of human history, which we put 12,000 there now because of Göbekli Tepe in Turkey. And it has symbols that have not been recognizable. It has animals carved that are not recognizable, and it's only 12,000 years old. So when we are talking about the level of what is being hidden, and I have looked at these men in their eyes, and they say, I've listened to you, and we go on these missions, and we realize she's telling the truth. We are living on a concocted planet. Why? Why should people in the United States not know what our government is putting billions of dollars in to missions in which, in the one case having to do with Antarctica, these words have been said to me by more than one person? Linda, for the last 15 to 20 years, there have been missions that have been trying to take out specific artifacts in Antarctica. To where? They do not know. Why? Because they know, one, that global climate change is going to melt and continue melting, and some of the ancient archaeology is going to become visible, and there is no way to stop it, and that our government has been trying to take out artifacts. And when you ask these guys, what artifacts? They say, we don't know. The people that go on missions and have talked to me, they've been there in communication with satellites, and that the satellites have been monitoring the length and what they are reporting while they are walking through long, long 2 miles was one entire 2 mile completely formed, no joints visible, no seams. As one man said, it is like walking in something that you think it was that out of somebody's mind. It was just whomp put down, and that it has energy in it, that the walls glow, and they have no idea where the energy comes from, which has led to a very interesting discussion about the fact that there are also pyramids. And then you get into the issue of concepts that at one point, how far back? If you say to a geophysicist, when was the last time that Antarctica was free of ice? It's interesting, Whitley, that there's not a consensus. This may also be being hidden. You would get, if you go to Wikipedia, that which I consider now to be like meat cleaver research, it is not going to give you anything that is going to be scientifically accepted, but it's where you kind of start. Everything in Wikipedia is very clumsy and ham-handed and political. But You right. will
it's
go
a mess.
To Wikipedia.
And Wikipedia is a disaster.
Oh, it's terrible what has happened.
All I have to do
happened.
Is read my own Wikipedia page
yeah.
to know that.
Oh, my God. If trying to politicize and sometimes embarrass people by
yeah.
putting them into categories, and you can't get it changed, even if though it's your name and supposedly about you. Well, when you put in the question, when is the last time Antarctica was free of ice? It is so interesting. There is no consensus, but you will see these two dates given the most often, 13 million years ago or 33 million years ago. Whitley, either way.
There's a fair spread there.
Well, look. Let's compare it in a fraction to something that I think makes this point really dramatically. Homo erectus. The famous Lucy in Africa is supposed to be no more than 2 million years old. Now, if Antarctica was free of ice 13 million years ago, put 2 over 13. If it was 33 million years ago, put 2 over 33 million. Either way, if there has been an alien presence that was building huge structures on the roundish continent that we call Antarctica 13 million years ago or 33 million years ago, look at how further back in time it is over the first standing up mammalian Homo erectus. And when you begin to look at the timeline of life on this planet with the consciousness that alien intelligences have been using the planet, the moon, Mars, and the solar system for vast timelines before we ever even genetically had a mammal standing up, then the idea that humanity right now in 2018 has a clue about what has been happening in the solar system, no. And why? Because when counterintelligence coming out of the Truman administration were given assignments to find out some of the truth about Antarctica and an alien presence, and eventually in the 50s they knew it was on the moon for sure, the policy overriding in the United States, in Russia, all the allies of World War II, was nobody is to know this outside of the most classified operations. And that, unfortunately, is still in operation, but humans who have been on these special ops, who have been in Antarctica, who have seen these huge structures, have known firsthand that the hieroglyphs are unrecognizable to scientists. They then feel
Linda,
are given permission to come to me and say, you've got to know this.
We got to take a little brief break right here.
They are found deep in a dying jungle, 6 infants. They aren't apes. They aren't human either, not quite. So what are they? When they are spirited off to the United States, an incredible discovery is made. They are as smart as us, not human. The company that found them wants to buy and sell them as the most valuable animals on Earth, brilliant workers who need not be paid. Somebody has to stop this travesty, and that's where primatologist Beth Cook comes in. But can she stand up to the power and wealth that seeks to exploit them? Find out in Whitley Strieber's first standalone science fiction novel in 7 years. New. Get it on Amazon as an ebook or paperback.
You've probably heard the music for years. It's the theme song for Dreamland. But you may not know the name of the piece, The O of Pleasure. Or the name of the composer, Ray Lynch. Ray Lynch is a 3-time Billboard Award winner. Ray is also the composer of the platinum album, Deep Breakfast. Pandora calls Ray one of the most influential artists in New Age pop and adult alternative circles. For music that will move your heart and set your spirit soaring? Visit www.raylynch.com.
The Afterlife Revolution is a work of love written across the bridge between the living and the dead, between me and my beloved wife, Anne. You can learn what it means to live across this bridge by reading or listening to the audiobook of The Afterlife Revolution. It's available in paperback, as a Kindle, and as an audiobook on Audible.com, Amazon.com, Audiobooks.com, and wherever audiobooks are sold. We're talking to Linda Moulton Howe. Her website is earthfiles.com. She has a terrific YouTube page. She's on Facebook. She's on KGRA Radio with a live show. She's in a lot of places. And as you can hear, they're worth going to. Okay, so Linda, let's continue on with this overriding umbrella of secrecy,
right,
which is something that I am affected by personally because I have been asked not to say certain things that I could not find out unless I agreed not to say them. I don't have a security clearance, and I certainly don't want one because of the hassles that would then become involved.
Yeah.
But it was so sensitive that they engaged with me using this amnesia program in order to be sure that I was staying on the straight and narrow.
Right.
Now, this stuff, what in the world could be the reason for this? I don't understand it. The things I know that I'm supposed not to talk about are no big deal. In fact, much more important stuff is out there all over the place.
Well, you were the first of the abductees to do a major and important work, communion, followed by transformation. And so you proved to the government that not only were you in interaction with non-human beings, but that you had a mind that was penetrating about some of the issues that they're afraid of, which is hybridization as a major program on this planet. One of the statistics thrown around in 2018 by a variety of people has been that our government, perhaps working with the allies of World War II, know for a fact that 30% of the 7.2 billion people on this planet now are technically extraterrestrial Homo sapien hybrids. 30% is a large number. If that were true, then the implications become clear, that we would be dealing with intelligences that put in motion Homo erectus 2 million years ago, manipulated DNA in already evolving primates to create a series of standing up humanoids that would include Denisovan and Neanderthalensis and this current model of Cro-Magnon Homo sapiens sapien, and that something else is coming. When you look at the history of standing up primate mammalian humanoids on the Earth, why was Neanderthalensis replaced by Cro-Magnon Homo sapiens sapien? That is one of the biggest mysteries to me personally at this point in my investigation.
And folks, to understand how extraordinary that is, Linda, why don't you tell us a little bit about what happened when that replacement took place, what actually happened in the fossil record?
Well, you probably can describe that better than
I. Oh, sure I can. It happened in two stages. In the first stage, suddenly this more advanced creature appears out of Russia, out of Asia, and moves into Europe, which we now call Cro-Magnon Man. He can do certain things very, very differently and much better than Neanderthal could. We see an exponential increase in the quality of stone tools. Then something else happens about 40,000 years ago, now about 90,000 years after that event. Another thing happens, and that is that extraordinary art begins to appear in caves. Apparently, at the same time that this took place. A supernova was striking Earth with sheets of gamma rays, suggesting that perhaps some kind of evolutionary change took place because of the supernova. It also appears that the part of the brain that controls language grew dramatically at about the same time. So these two events are what made us what we are today. That they are what converted Neanderthal to Cro-Magnon and Cro-Magnon to become modern man.
And Intel people that I have talked to over the last, I would say, decade, who really have these details, they were exposed to it in their work. They seek me out because they want to encourage me to keep doing what I'm doing in the public. And I have heard this more than once, going all the way back to that 1983 paper at Kirtland Air Force Base when I was working on the home box office project, and it said right in black and white, extraterrestrial biological entities manipulated DNA in already evolving primates to create Homo sapien. And they didn't define which Homo sapien, it was just the Latin Homo sapien. I remember that very clearly. And the impression that I had was then Homo erectus, Lucy in Africa, was the first genetic manipulation of evolving primates, which would have been the chimpanzee, orangutan group, and that we have a direct link to them. There's what? Only 0.5% of a difference between the Homo sapiens sapien current model DNA as it's laid out in a genome, the genome being the quote-unquote word for humans genetically. And if you compare it to a chimpanzee, it's only like 0.5% difference.
Yeah,
if you compare us to a cow, it's only 4% difference.
Right. Yeah, we're very close to a lot of the other mammals, but the dramatic difference between us and them is so appalling, because if you look around you, we anthropomorphize animals a lot, and oh, my dog knows this, or my cat, etc. But the truth is, they are light. We are light years beyond them.
Right.
We can't explain essentially a single thing about the world they live in to the animals who live with us every day.
Right.
Not a thing.
Yeah.
And what are we, Linda?
Well, I really do think that we are extraterrestrial evolving primate hybrids, and that new hybrids are being produced, and that question that I was referring to earlier is that our government probably feels that hybridization is a formal threat to national security, and therefore they would take a position, a military position of, we have to block this. We have to study what is happening genetically, and we've got to block these ETs. Well, it could be that that's impossible, and that what is happening
is
being replaced, like a wave of genetic evolution, and that that's the question. Would the next Homo sapiens sapien on Earth be less violent than this one, or more violent, and is violence what these beings that produced us wanted in the first place?
Well, that's a really interesting question, and we're going to get into that more deeply in just a moment. We'll be right back.
The new unknowncountry.com is on the way. There'll be exciting new graphics, much easier navigation, the ability to subscribe either with your credit card or using PayPal, the return of our free message board and subscriber chat room, and so much more. The new site will be intuitive and easy to use, but it will also be demonstrated and explained on Whitley's YouTube channel. As to when, well, we're hopefully just weeks away.
The Afterlife Revolution is getting great reviews. There's a tremendous, lovely response to it, and I'm so pleased and humbled, because it's an effort on the part of myself and Anne. And I love Anne so much, I want her to succeed in this incredible task that she has undertaken of returning and communicating across the bridge between the worlds. And she's really doing it. This is a real thing that's happening. Listen to some of these reviews. Anne and Whitley Strieber lay out their life's work in the most exquisitely beautiful manner. This moving book comes from the heart, the unified heart of two people who have dedicated their lives in this realm and the next to revealing the nature of consciousness as it makes its sojourn in this human form. That's just one. Here's another. I love, love this book. It's a wonderful read, especially if you lost somebody very close to you. Just incredible. Here's another one. The book shows you how to grow your soul, for lack of a better term. Through Anne's insight, Whitley shares invaluable information that could only be from the other side. So take it seriously. Go to Amazon and get Afterlife Revolution. Go on to Amazon and get the Afterlife Revolution in paperback or in Kindle format. And if you have questions or thoughts, write me at whitley@strieber.com. I'm right here. I'm ready to answer anything you ask to help you in any way I can, always. Now, this is a very interesting question as to what they wanted and may have wanted. And I look at it in terms of history, because if you look at history, what you see is human history is a history of violence marked by gradual increases in the quality of life, but with these extraordinary explosions of violence, which have been getting bigger, and there's no difference in the human being. The difference is that the more potent the weapons we develop, the more terrible the violence we perpetrate on each other. What is this about? Do you think they want this? It suggests we might be some kind of a game, almost.
Yeah, and that issue between Neanderthalensis and Cro-Magnon Homo sapiens sapiens, the more that scientists have studied Neanderthalensis, they have found that they, from pollen, on the ground in certain rectangular kind of patches, it was very clear that Neanderthals buried their dead and put flowers on those graves. We know that in terms of cubic volume, the Neanderthal brain was bigger than current Cro-Magnon Homo sapiens sapiens. And it is also very interesting that that beautiful art in caves that you mentioned, it was always attributed until just the last 4 or 5 years to the emergence of Cro-Magnon Homo sapiens sapiens in the caves of Lascaux and certain areas on the French and Spanish border in that area. But now there have been papers that have written that suggest that Neanderthalensis was also doing some of the, we'll say, less realistic artwork. And some, but nevertheless, artwork in these caves. If Neanderthalensis was peaceful, had some sense of soul, buried their dead, put flowers on the graves, had larger brain capacity than this particular model of us, why was it replaced? And when you look at, as you just said, the singular characteristic of the Homo sapiens sapien Cro-Magnon of the last 40,000 years has been its evolution through war. And then
the evolution of its technology through war.
Through war. And so if you say, as the remote viewers do and the military whistleblowers, we are dealing with a lot of life in this universe, and that some of it is friendly to us, some of it is very neutral, as if they only monitor, and then something or some things that are truly hostile and would like humanity eradicated from Earth without any explanation for why that would be the case either, then what does friendly mean? If you look at the bell-shaped curve of friendly, neutral, hostile, well, what is our gauge for friendliness if it isn't helping us with tools of war, helping us neutralize nuclear missiles? They definitely have done that. And then you step back and say, well, if we have some of the friendlies that in the 1960s were considered hostile because they were interfering with our Minuteman missiles, then what is the definition of friendly, neutral, and hostile from a human point of view? It is seen mostly and largely through the lens of military priorities. And nuclear missiles are not going to help anything on Earth, that is for sure. And so it appears that if there is, if you read out of what happened in the 60s, the interference with our Minuteman missiles, what is the priority of the non-humans? It appears to keep to keep us alive, or to keep some version of us alive on Earth. So what is it that we provide for them that they would even put up with us evolving and developing nuclear missiles until a point we were a threat? We were a threat even to them. And abductees have said, what humans have never understood is that when you split the atom in a fission atomic explosion, you are tearing into other dimensions, and they will not allow that. We did it in 1945, and we have not been allowed to do it since in terms of whole-scale atomic warfare or anything that would increase the number of atomic explosions, because the non-humans said you cannot tear into other dimensions. Well, now, that means that a weapon that we were allowed, quote-unquote, to develop through Einstein's energy equals mc squared, a formula that was probably placed in Einstein's mind by non-humans, is a guess of mine, then it is as if humans are being used exactly like pawns on a chessboard, and that it has something to do with the development of certain kinds of container bodies that will take, that we have souls in these container bodies of humans, and that the soul is the most important part of us, and that the grays, the reptilians, the blondes, the blues, the oranges, the whites, all of the menagerie of life, none of them may have a soul that is equivalent to what was put inside of Homo sapiens sapien Cro-Magnon by something in the divine field that wanted to pull the rug out from under all of the life forms in this particular universe that use cloning, that use hybridization, that make androids, that the prime intelligences are rarely seen or experienced here, but what they make in order to genetically manipulate life on Earth is the alien presence that we have lived with, and it has not been a part of our life because it is behind the wall. It is behind the mirror in which they watch, monitor, and manipulate. And then we finally get to the question, what are we really if a divine field placed very special souls inside of these constructed, manipulated androids on Earth? What are we in relationship to manipulating alien intelligences that themselves do not have the souls that could only come from the divine field? And where I'm speaking now, which I cannot prove, but I sense, is where the rubber hits the road in this incredible universe that we are in, where the dark and the light have been pitted against each other right from the very beginning, and that there is something about this universe and what happens with the evolution of life forms in it that comes closest to a laboratory for the creation of souls.
Oh, Linda, that was quite a flight. And, you know, I think that over the years, you and I have both very gradually gravitated toward this conclusion.
Right.
That this is a soul factory.
Yeah.
Now that gets me to another question. The soul factory's machinery is beginning to wear out. That is to say, we're obviously in trouble. And I don't want to even argue about it with people who say we're not, because we are. Greenland is melting faster than anyone ever expected.
Yep.
And the visitors have for years said to me before, I mean, they said to me, excuse me, years ago, or I got the impression, I don't want people to think that I sit and talk with them, because that's not how it works. But these thoughts kind of float in from the outside, is the way it works, seems to work. So I'm always saying, when I say they said to me, I'm not saying they sat down and said, Whitley, blah, blah, blah. But I got the message that there was going to be an extraordinary change. And as it was put, it will come upon them unaware.
Yeah.
Now that causes me to look around constantly at all of the kind of potential black swans. I watch, the super volcanoes around the world. I watch all kinds of different things. And one of the black swans is if Greenland and Antarctic glaciers slide into the ocean.
Right.
This would cause the inundation of coastal areas all over the world.
Right. And it would fit into the human abduction syndrome, in which just in the last 3 years, increasingly, I am getting letters and emails from people in the abduction syndrome who are describing having vivid dreams that repeat about water everywhere.
Me too. My God. I didn't realize you got those from other people.
Oh, yeah.
That dream is the central dream of my life.
I have hundreds, literally hundreds of letters and emails. It goes back. On Wednesday night, I do the Earth Files YouTube channel live stream, and it has evolved into a dialogue with a growing audience that is one of the most fascinating experiences that I've ever had with other human beings. And when I would raise, let's say, a question about what are people dreaming about, which I've done on my YouTube channel, and then I start getting the most extraordinary emails from people that I would say of 100, maybe 90% begin with this sentence, Linda, I have never told another human being in my life, not my parents, not my brother, not my sister, not my wife, not my husband, whoever it is that's writing. And so I'm sitting with a valuable, it's like a file of gold, of insights into humans that I believe them, that they have never, ever been asked this question, and they have never felt comfortable talking about what they have seen in vivid dreams. And the water dreams, the water experiences, even telepathy with other life forms, has to do with something that is going to involve a lot of water. And some of the abductees say, it's as if Noah's flood is something real, and Linda, it's going to happen again.
Linda, this gets me kind of to go down a slightly different path. I'm not sure we're not. I think it might be the right path, though. You remember, of course, that Rand and Rose Flamath years ago came up with the idea of crustal shift that was then popularized and expanded by Graham Hancock. And I found some evidence that this might really happen. If you look on planet Earth and draw a line around the planet from Easter Island to Nan Madol to Angkor Wat to Giza, etc., and so forth, you have a geodesic line. It is not pointing toward true north. What it is pointing toward a place approximately 1,120 miles west of true north.
Hmm.
nowhere now. But maybe that was true north when these various monuments or when sacred activity began at these various sites.
And they were active and alive.
Yeah. And the case that is made for sudden crustal shift is a good one in a lot of different ways, because what happens apparently is the shift takes place so deep that it doesn't cause earthquakes and disruptions in the shapes of the continents, but it does revise the position of the oceans. And that might be what these dreams are about, that all of a sudden the ocean is going to show up in places where it wasn't before. I mean, this is just speculation, but there's something big to do with water coming down the pike. I know it.
And now, staring us in the face.
It is staring us in the face.
Is the question of Antarctica. It, if the Peary Reese map was so accurate of a Antarctica that was without ice, and it goes back to the first time of knowledge of things in 1570-something, but that it was already drawing an accurate aerial view of Antarctica. Who did that, and how far back does it go? And now we're back to that question. How did a totally ice-free Antarctica, a kind of roundish, large landmass, end up in what we call the South Pole of the planet that has been covered with ice, deep ice, since the last height of the Ice Age 18,000 years ago, and obviously going on before? Was Antarctica further toward the equator once upon a time? And is crustal shift, in which they, if you were doing animation for a movie, you would show suddenly forces that were working in the magma right below the rind that we live on, that's only 15 to 20 miles, and it sits on all of this magma that is like warm jello. And if something happens and warms up that jello, the hypothesis is that rind that we live on would suddenly slip. And if it suddenly slipped, then something like the roundish continent of Antarctica might go from tropical or subtropical down to what ended up being a very icy South Pole.
And it might happen so quickly that trees would be flash frozen.
Yeah.
And this, something like this might have happened very recently. There is a scientist called, I believe, Lonnie Thompson, who studies glaciers. And he has discovered at the base of a number of Andean glaciers, flash frozen plant life, weeds and things that were part of a subtropical or temperate environment that were literally frozen in seconds, the ways you freeze food to go into in a freezer section.
Any carbon dating timeline?
Yeah, it happened about 5,000 years ago. And this is also the time in which Ötzi the Iceman was found.
What
died. Now, Ötzi died in an alpine meadow in the Tyrol in northern Italy. He was then covered with snow. That snow did not melt until a few years ago.
Right.
What happened?
Right.
That alpine meadow was filled with snow that then never melted. Meanwhile, in the Andes, plants that were growing, had to have been growing at ground level, were suddenly lifted up into these mountains so fast that they were flash frozen.
Wow.
What is going on here?
Yeah.
And then you look at a book called Hamlet's Mill, and it is a long, complex, but extraordinary book that tells the story of the stones from the past, a warning that people left us engraved in stone from the distant past that essentially says, normally Earth is very quiet and very benign, but every so often it goes berserk like Hamlet. That's why they call it Hamlet's Mill.
Right.
And I think that what we are talking about is the possibility that we are going to be experiencing that soon, and they know it and have known it for a long time. And out of this catastrophe is going to come a new world and a new mankind.
Yeah, and one of the whistleblowers who was a Navy SEAL that I talked to 2.5 years ago, he told me, he said that he's one of the eyewitnesses in Antarctica to the hieroglyphs and the huge structures. And he said it was his understanding that our government is operating with the idea that the Earth itself is going to go through something that would be like physical upheaval that humans are never going to be able to stop, and that it's going to involve more volcanoes, more seismic activity, tremendous amounts of water, and that it's coming soon.
Well, if you look at the Yellowstone supervolcano, it is changing. And I'm sorry that, you know, they downplay it as much as they can, but it is getting more active. There's no question about that. The geysers are all blowing off more and more frequently. There are hot spots appearing. There's all kinds of stuff happening.
And if it went like the last crater, what is it? It would take out 6 or 7 states.
Well, it would end the United States as we know it. Oddly enough, where I live in Southern California, close to it, but outside of the wind drift that would be involved, would be mostly spared. But east of it, all of that area, which is our wheat and corn growing area, would be badly affected.
Right.
It would be the most dangerous thing that had ever happened, certainly in the United States.
And a USGS geologist I talked to did an interview about Yellowstone 4 years ago, a long interview, and then I've talked with periodically on the phone. I think it was 18 months ago I checked in with him when there were supposed to be some of those multiple quakes. And he said, don't worry unless we start getting a series of 5 or higher, meaning on the magnitude scale. So as long as, he says, as long as these multiple quakes stay in the 2s, 3s, and even the 4s, it's not dangerous. But he said if we start having a series of 5s, we will go to Homeland Security.
A series of 5s, folks. We'll keep a watch out for that. Because it's something, there's a sense, you know, I always kind of poo-poo the people who go out there and sell a sense of something of incipience, like the visitors are going to land tomorrow. And you look at their life history and you realize they've been saying this for 25 or 30 years. But I'm beginning to look at the environment around me and all of the things that are kind of getting close to tipping point.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just have to say, I don't know if it'll be in 2019, but at some point something is going to tip.
Right.
But there's another thing happening that is, again, it's an outlier, but it's really part of this. And I don't know how many children you're exposed to or you're around. I'm around a lot of children, and they're very different. Like, I know children who, at the age of 6, read like I read when I was a young adult.
My granddaughter is so advanced.
How old is she?
She turned 4 on October 10th. She has a vocabulary, sentence structure, memory of things. When she was 18 months, she clearly remembers. She calls me mom, and being with her, it is almost eerie. She is so bright. She is so aware of her environment, and she has been since she was born. And right now, she has been moved twice in her preschool up with older children. And I think of my granddaughter, Hannah, as being representative of maybe what has been happening. That maybe if there are genetic manipulations of the planet, that we are going to be made either better and brighter or something else. But if we're going to be made better and brighter and not so violent, I look at my grandchild as an example because she really is extraordinary. And the teachers told my daughter 2 years ago when she was two, she was already in the preschool then, they said she is two going on 50. And I think that is the phrase, two-year-olds going on 50. That is the gestalt of something happening in the, we'll call it that 1 to 4 year old generation right now, that something is different in them, and they are, she is so aware. She realized that my daughter had my photo that would come up on my daughter's phone when I rang, and she immediately, nobody had to teach her. She ran to my daughter saying, "My mom's on the phone."
Yeah, that's exactly, that's so familiar. When I get together with my, with the parents of my grandson and granddaughter's classes, all the kids are like this, to a greater or lesser degree. But for example, in my granddaughter's class, what has happened is, and this happened with most of the children in the class, they learned to read and then immediately could read anything, where they would start reading, you know, with, and I remember when I was that age, I was very excited that I could read Dick and Jane, but my granddaughter can read anything. And
well,
she's six.
My father recognized something in me, and I'm grateful to him. By the age of four, I was reading, writing, and doing math. So by the time I went to grade school, it was just fun. And when you think back that there wasn't really any way in the 40s to accommodate bright children. And today, what is the accommodation in our educational school systems for children that are going to break the mold and be on the high end?
Well, fortunately, where my kids are, there's great accommodation. The teachers are wonderful about it and very supportive of, and both kids are in classes full of similar children. And it's not that all children are like that by any means, but an awful lot are. And so that gives me hope for the future, because I think to myself, things are going to get very sticky very soon. And I just hope that these wonderful kids are here to stitch together a new world and a new mankind, because we are worth saving, and so is this beautiful world. And it ain't anybody going to do it but them.
Amen. I completely agree. And on that note, let's say Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, because I have to take off. But Whitley, this has been a wonderful discussion with you, and I hope we can do it again in the new year.
We always have such a good time, Linda. This is an old friendship. We know where each other are coming from. It's a joy, as always. And folks, joy to you too. It's a great season to be alive, and may the new year bring us blessings galore.
Yes.
So here we are at the end of another year on dreamlandandunknowncountry.com. I so hope we get the new website up in January of 2019. It has been a long, hard haul. I'd like to thank everybody who works on this show, our news editor, Matthew Frizzell, our coordinator, Amy Safrankova, our announcer, Ted Alexander, Nikki Thomas, who takes care of your subscriber problems, Al Harlow, who writes all of those Dreamland blurbs and answers our email, and of course, my wonderful friend, Jeremy Vianney, host of The Experience on unknowncountry.com. And now let's listen to Auld Lang Syne, as sung by the Dreamland Singers many years ago. In the group, you will hear the voice of our founder, Ann Strieber, who founded this website in 1999 and is beloved in memory.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Sure.